Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney. You're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Hi, and welcome to our last FX Podcast from NAB. I'm John Montgomery. And before we begin, we just want to take a moment to thank our sponsors, because without them, we couldn't be bringing you these podcasts from NAB. First of all, we've got sponsorship from GenArts. They're the creators of Sapphire Plugins, the essential VFX toolkit for digital artists. Stay tuned to www.genarts.com for info about the upcoming release for OFX products, including Toxic, Nuke, and Fusion 64.
And our other sponsor is DaVinci, and I'm glad I'm reading the rest of the DaVinci one, because I really like this thing. It's DaVinci has been showing here at NAB, the Resolve, and if you'd like to find out more information about the Resolve and the amazing capabilities that it has for real-time performance at 4K, just visit davsys.com, that's davsys.com, and you can find all about the DaVinci there. So that's they actually really are, I mean, well, I guess we sort of partly rigged it that way, right? But we actually have got two really, really good sponsors here at the show. Because
people we can stand behind.
Oh, totally.
I wouldn't buy a Flame or Smoke without getting
there's no
Sapphire.
It's like the default plugins. And it has been for a while. But similarly, right? Like, I mean, a Resolve or a 2K color system is like what I've been using my entire career.
Yeah, fantastic.
Should also come with a Corona.
You should get Corona to sponsor. That would
Vegas
be good.
After all.
Corona sponsoring would be excellent.
Yes, it is. Well, it's been a fun week here.
This is the last day.
I choose to have a margarita tonight, not a Corona, as my fellow founders are doing. But that's because I prefer a podcast under the influence.
Yes, exactly. Well, just before we begin, let's go ahead and start out with a couple corrections. The folks at Imagineer pointed out some numbers in correction from our roundtable on Monday night. And, we don't like having incorrect information in the stuff, but the whole pricing thing is a bit confusing. But I just want to point out that the pricing for Mogul Review that we listed was much higher than the actual thing. It's actually, for months 1 to 6, the price is $1,800 a month.
$1,800 a month.
Okay, yeah, yep. U.S. dollars here.
Yep.
Month 17 to 18, it drops to $1,200. And then month 19, it drops to 800. So in essence, what happens over time, it drops in the price.
And that's software and hardware?
Software and hardware support and everything, okay. Yeah.
So is that the entry level?
Yeah, yeah. So that's the basic level on that. So it was a bit, and we apologize for that. And again, we're trying to be really been open and support those guys. Like I said, my buddy CE, who I spent 3 weeks traveling through Asia, is working with them. So
here's the thing, though, and I take nothing away from the fact that we just got that wrong, is I actually think they have a communication problem, John. Mm-hmm. I actually think that, and we actually almost sort of experienced that ourselves with FX PhD. It's a simple enough model when you write it in a spreadsheet, but actually just communicating at the show. Like, for example, when Red did that camera, right, they did 3K for 3K. It was like a slogan almost, right? And it's sort of that's what sticks, yeah? And doing a slogan of between the first month and the 6th month, you'll get this, and then it decreases in a sliding scale based on, which feature set you've adopted comes off the tongue considerably less. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, no,
right.
Exactly. And that's why I told Mike that earlier today, but that's why I told him at the booth. And they're actually aware of that, and they're working hard to do that. And, that's one reason that we're trying to help them get that word out. But it's difficult. I went through a PhD nightmare, the first term. Finally did a whole QuickTime movie to explain everything,
right.
So because it was new. So anyway, again, we don't like making mistakes. So
what else did we have to correct? Red Ray, I know we wanted to talk more about. Not really a correction.
Yeah, it was not so much a correction, I think, as a omission.
We undersold it, I think.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, right? I saw it. It was presented, and they were showing it, and the person that was explaining it to me was discussing it in terms of, oh, you can play back 4K files on set, right? And that is true. And I was thinking, okay, well, if you think where they are now, right, they record 4K, 36 megabytes a second, and you can play that back out of the camera, right? Now, admittedly, when it comes out of the camera, at the moment, it's only 720p. But we're talking about a product that's going to come out in a year's time, and the camera's already a year old. So I'm thinking, oh, yeah, well, now they're just going to have a box that can play back those R3D files at full 4K as opposed to on the camera at only 720. And at that level, it's a good product, under $1,000, nothing wrong with it, just wasn't setting my afterburners alight as being revolutionary, especially and it's in the same tent as a 5K camera and another camera that's 3K for $3,000. Then I went down and saw Stuart today, And I got a completely different take. And I should do a shout out to one of, I think it was our postgrads that posted saying, I think you should go check this out again because there's more to it than that. And boy, was he right. Because there is a DVD slot in the box. And I pretty much discounted this as being just something you could back up some files to or something. I didn't really pay a lot of attention to it. So let me explain how it works as I understand it now, but I'm going to put a caveat that, you know, they haven't finished speccing it and I could have got it even more wrong. But John, imagine you're on set and you do what I just described. That's one whole use. But a whole second use, right, is let's say, Jeff, you and I are working on a program, got nothing to do with Red. Zip. Right? Just forget R3D files altogether. And you've done the effects. You send it to me. I'm on a whatever, base light. And I finish the whole film as DPX, full high-end. Let's say it's a Resolve 4K DPX files comes out. You then take that into a new Red application we haven't seen yet and will encode it down to a new Red format we haven't seen yet. And that will be at around 6 to 8 megabits a second. So now think about it, 36 megabytes a second. So it's 8 times bit per byte, plus it's only down to 6 or 8. And so it's a 40th of what we're seeing off the Red. But that would be a full 4K file. I put that on a standard DVD, wander onto...
Blu-ray.
Well, no, it's just... Well, it's a DVD, right? It's a DVD.
Matter.
Yeah. And so I take it onto a DVD.
Oh, it's just data, right?
Yeah, as data. And now I go to, say, a club, right, where we've got a projector set up. Could be a 2K projector, could be a 4K projector. And I can now project my film. So whereas at the moment I'd have to drag along a RAID array and a computer to play it out, this would let me have a projector.
Yes.
So let's say I've got a corporate presentation. I could make a video wall that's being powered by a rental 4K at here at NAB. I'm doing a, you know, FX Guide Live, and I make up a nice reel in 4K and walk along with one disc, which has got to cost, what, a few bucks, one Red Ray, which is going to cost, what, under $1,000, and I got 4K, you know, feed into the projector, 100% reliable. Now, that's something I can get excited about.
So it's a 4K Apple TV.
Yeah, I guess in a
kind
sense.
Kind of the size and playback.
There's serious video hardware in there that they've got.
Yeah.
No, I don't mean to make light of it. I just mean.
No. I didn't mean that way. I just meant there's some serious hardware in there that's putting out 4K, because that's not something light. I mean, you need dual DVI in general to get out anything of that resolution.
Oh, yeah. Hence the quad connectors on the back, which work, you know. So here's the other thing, if you think about it. Like, if you're an independent filmmaker, you've just solved digital distribution. So... Because now we had already said it was a step down the path to 4K monitors and 4K projectors, but that's a pretty cool thing, right? For you could like make, let's say we had a film. This is a non-DRM, four times higher than Blu-ray format that I can burn at home, and it's under a grand for a player.
That's cool.
That is amazing.
I mean, Blu-ray wasn't under a grand when they launched it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it makes, we definitely undersold it. Yeah.
Now it becomes sex central.
Well, that's very cool. Well, there's a ton of great stuff this week on the show floor. And what we thought we'd do is kind of take a talk about some of our favorites and some of our interesting things that we saw while we're drinking and sipping a few cocktails now that we've got the things out of the way.
Yeah, I was thinking that, you know, we've kind of mentioned that 3D has been a big buzzword on here, and it seems like another one is asset management. It seems like a lot of people are talking about that. I mean, we just came back Final Cut Pro server meeting.
Oh yeah,
we obviously did the article.
Fun to see, finally, it was really interesting, and I was quite impressed by it. I've got to say, I mean, I can just totally see it fitting.
I'm sorry,
I'm going to want to buy a copy.
Your comment about the Radical Media video and pointing at the screen.
See it on the Twitter, sorry. What was check out our Ion Fusion or Generation story in it. Poison Cane or Case.
Poison Cane.
What? Wow.
I made a joke about the monitor pointing, the number of shots they had in the Radical Media video they played, the Final Cut music, where people were pointing at the monitor.
That looks interesting. What's
no, my favorite line was the, you know, this thing worked so efficiently, we got to send people home early. Like,
yeah, right.
Yeah, why? Because it was down? Yeah. I don't, that's, you know, that's like...
But I will say
I can
this,
see
right?
It. Does.
It was
efficient.
I want one. Guys.
Point, yeah, point
absolutely.
Blank, I want one.
Absolutely. Well, especially because part of the demo they showed it working across, you know, between China and wherever, San Francisco, I don't know.
Well, Radical Media is LA. but I had a feeling that was coming out of the New York office.
All right. So, but I mean, still, they showed it mixing between remote offices, and I was thinking,
well, now,
hey.
Can we think of a company that might have remote offices that uses Final Cut a lot, has an enormous amount of assets, and has to put
does a little web TV show and a bunch of classes.
It's a ton of material that's moved in a new place and trying to figure out setting up right from the start.
Yeah, it was nice that it integrated with iChat, email. It handled assets that weren't just Final Cut.
Did you get the impression that though a lot of that's probably through Apple Script and scripting versus built-in functionality? I couldn't really tell from the demo how they accomplished that stuff.
They
talked about being very open with scripting forth. I would probably think that a lot of it's handled through that. But it's, you know, that I've done more scripting than I wanted to and stuff, learning from the website.
Any
and
more
the
scripting
stuff.
And you're getting a screenwriter credit, yep.
Yeah, but Apple Script and so forth is pretty straightforward to do, and especially that about workflows. If you use Automator to create workflows, it becomes even easier. So it's not that big a.
And we're talking $9.99 for 10
user.
Well, actually, it's 10 concurrent users, right?
Oh, really? That's even better. I didn't know that.
So
I was thinking you had a laptop and a desktop, and
no, you could have like 30 or 40 actual computers, only 10 logged on at any one minute.
And then the next jump goes to unlimited.
Now, in our case, you know,
10's fine.
10 is fine because. We might have 20 or 30 stations, but they're not all going to be using it at once.
Right.
We take over your seats during the day.
And it's Java so that it's able to actually run on Windows and stuff. And I believe there's even a link into iPhone, though.
Yep.
I don't know how that works.
Well, they said that you could do the review and approval and stuff like that right on an iPhone.
But, I mean, I think the thing about it is that, and you sort of summed it up, Jeff, here was a room full of people, and there was about, I don't know, 600-700 people in the room, that were getting excited about asset management.
No, I'm telling you, you know, I remember working years ago, probably 12 years ago, something like that, when Matador first, we were working on Matador and, you know, a bunch of platforms, and I was saying, we're going to have a real problem here keeping track of assets. And I kept hearing the word asset management. I kept tossing it out to manufacturers, and they would look at me kind of strangely. And nobody really looked at it. And then along came Toxic, and that was kind of one of the concepts there. But nobody really has done. I mean, there were a couple of asset management things on the floor of NAB over the years, but they all kind of came and went. And now we're seeing, you know, generation, which essentially is an asset management in some form, you know, tracking data, making comments, all that kind of stuff. We're seeing this from Apple, and I'll post a bunch. We shot the devil out of that thing at the festival. I'll put those on the Flickr group.
Didn't I not also hear golden words that it wasn't all a big giant database that you're checking in and out of?
That was the generation.
Yeah. Oh, generation.
No. I mean,
at the Apple one.
The Apple one. It wasn't a giant database.
Yeah, it seems like people have kind of figured out that.
Database.
I know. But
that just never worked.
They're all
freaking forever to install. Huge amounts of disk space.
But then the third thing is the whole idea of the flow, the gridiron, which you've talked to quite a bit, John.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, that's kind of fits the same category, sort of.
Of managing things, you're right. And I've been waiting, you know, because I've been waiting to talk to them at the booth all week. And the reason I know,
every time I'd see you, you're going, I'm going over to see Gridiron. I'm like, well, I thought you went yesterday. I got tried and...
Yeah, but there's a guy there who's working on the product, Mark Collarin, and listeners may recognize that name because he's the guy that has done a ton of computer UIs in major motion pictures.
Well, yeah. And I mean, wow.
So I actually sat down. Let's go ahead and listen to Mark. And I had him asked him first about his background and then about kind of how that translated into what Flow is.
My background is in film graphics, and a very specialized little area of film graphics, which is designing computer interfaces for films. Everything from things like Mission Impossible, the Bourne films, The Island, Deja Vu, and Children of Men. So it's actually creating simulated computer interfaces that look like they're actual real systems, generally designed to tell a story or, you know, the best part of it, but a lot of the time just as background sort of action props to make a scene look real or even unreal, as a lot of the cases might be. So.
And so now you're effectively doing that for real. How'd you get tagged in to do that?
It's kind of long course, but developing the stuff for films, as the job progressed over the years, you get more involved in the futurism for the films. So people actually start to ask about, you know, can this be more realistic or can this be more genuine, even if it's a futuristic thing? So you start to look really hard at current technology, where it might go, and what the possibilities are. And by doing that in the films, you actually start to look at your own environments as well. So you start to sit down at your own computer, look at what you're doing, look at what you're having to deal with, and starting to see some of the edges, some of the little frustrations you have, and also develop an understanding as to what those frustrations are and maybe how those things could be different. And also looking at a lot of that research, you see some of the brilliant work that people are actually doing to change that. And it's quite inspiring, and it actually inspires you to start wanting to do it yourself, you know. So
how does flow work in the end?
What we actually do is take a back seat on the system. You know, we sit at a low level and just watch what you're doing. So as you're developing a piece of work, we look at the way you're building that thing together. So whether files are placed, imported, modified, cut, copied, pasted, rendered, output, they go back into another file, you know, we can actually see what you're actually doing. So the end result is, when you look at the job, you look at it in a folder, you just see a collection of files. Those files could be all over the place. They could be on the server, they could be in folders on your disk, they could be on external hard drives. But you never have the opportunity within the system to look at that as a whole and see how the thing is put together. Because we've been watching what you've been doing, and because we can actually look at the files themselves and understand what has happened to them, you know, what's been placed within them and what came out of them, we can then take all of those files and present them to you in a much more logical way. We can actually show it to you as the job itself. So you see everything from start to finish and the whole structure of that job as a single piece.
So now what I really like about that is this idea of not being forced to work in a certain way.
I just like the idea that it's going to look cool. No, seriously.
And a virtual 3D, you know, UI in the air that you can touch and so forth. And,
really?
Yeah. Cool. Didn't you send
it
to
the
report?
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's...
But I've always, you know, I've liked the
optical retina scanning.
The stuff the guys at Gridiron have done. I've loved Nucleo Pro, the stuff they've done. Just really, really cool guys. And we actually have some FX PhD members who are helping them out on the booth, demoing it this week, which is pretty cool. But
we were PhD members right left and center.
You'd love it because, I mean, I know the way we work. And the idea is just sitting there watching you the whole time. So, like, you can be in Photoshop, cut and paste into an Illustrator, and it's keeping track of what you've used. And so it just builds it automatically in the background. There's a contextual menu item. There's a folder in that you right-click on it in the Finder, open up the flow, you can see all the files that you make it. If you happen to want to throw out a file that's being used somewhere in a composition, the Finder actually warns, it's not the Finder, but the application actually warns you if you throw it out.
Okay, so let me ask you this question. Is that not going to be the Mac version of history on the flame, which I turn off because it just consumes up all my disk?
No, it's actually 0.02 or 0.2% of the UI of the CPU is taken. And you look at the process, we took a look at it when it was working, it's actually very, it's non-invasive. Now, I will say, it has the ability to save versions of your spot. So what you can do is actually, it maps everything you do to your files all the time. So, you know, over time, if it saves multiple versions, there is a chance that you could fill up your space. So you do need to be aware of that. But at the same time, that's really cool, because if you think about it, I don't know that they're going to do this, but you could, like, have a, you know, maybe a time-based view of what you've done to your project over time.
What was I doing, on Thursday?
Yeah, what did I do? What was the change I made on that day? Go back to that version, see what you did, and actually resuscitate it.
That's awesome.
It's really quite impressive.
It's time machine.
It's time machine crossed with history, right?
Under $400.
Wow.
And that's a single user. And then you can do stuff like get that, package it up, send it to another user, take all your files and archive it. That's the big thing, because I try and set up stuff in project folders,
stuff always ends up not.
Really interesting. Fits into what you were saying about the data management.
We also said it's smart enough to do things like you go to delete something in the Finder and it says, "Whoa, wait a minute, you shouldn't delete that. It's used in a project." And that's like
smart
key.
Tags, things like that. Right. So again, looking forward to that. That's, you know, probably going to be out later this year. It's not even in public beta yet. So
right, but they were talking. They had big signs up.
What else?
About it a lot.
What else? Some of the faves during the week. I'll jump in. I'll go back to Sapphire Sparks again.
Sapphire?
Because one of the big announcements this week was the OFX plugins. And I think people who have had applications that support that, like Fusion,
Scratch.
For instance, Scratch. I mean, all these people have been wanting
Toxic.
Carl to come out with those.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
and, it's been a big demand.
Killer on Toxic not having it.
Right. Yeah, and I think there's actually been some discussion because the OFX thing came from the Foundry, not between Carl or the Foundry, but like users
right.
out there in
yeah.
the world.
Worried
going,
that they wouldn't
know,
do it. Yeah.
They wouldn't do it, blah, blah, blah. But actually caught up with Carl on the show floor and asked him that exact question. Why is now the time that you did this?
Well, it seemed like there were enough products that were starting to get some traction that support OFX. Nuke, Toxic, Fusion 64, and quite a wide range of products. So we were excited to help new users of these products get started with Sapphire plugins. And it seemed like time to jump in and do it.
Now, you recently released plugins for Apple's effects plug architecture in Final Cut Pro. How's the performance of those? Are you using the GPUs or what on that?
We don't use the GPU currently, but we do use multi-core processing. So our software was written from the beginning to support multi-CPU rendering. On Autodesk Flame and Inferno, our initial releases many, many years ago, we initially developed the code to utilize multi-core rendering. And now, if you have a Mac with 4-core or 8-core, you should get quite nice performance with Sapphire plugins.
So they also announced that Final Cut...
Sorry, you were mentioning before the Foundry, right? But the funniest thing... The funniest thing happened earlier today. So I'm down at the booth, right? And I know Bill Collis, and he's just giving me shit from the Foundry, right? And he's like, why don't you ever say anything interesting on the podcast about... I mean, he's just winding me up, right? Because obviously we... But anyway, so he's just giving me this. And last year, I was trying to do a deal for PhD to get a whole lot of Nuke licenses at a good price for... And he was just making me, jump through hoops to, so I was like, it's revenge time.
He was winding you up.
He was winding me up. Yeah. Okay, totally. And so I'm like, well, I'm not going to talk about Nuke. You haven't done anything for me. I was like, you didn't even give me a free T-shirt. And then Jeff was down there, right?
Camera in hand, ready to go.
Yeah,
because Bill proceeded to run across the booth.
Well, yeah, because I was like, he said, well, we don't have any T-shirts. And I'm like, well, what about these things that you're wearing, right?
Yeah, they had nice black.
Yeah, and he's like, well, these are the only ones we've got. I'm like, all right, I want the shirt off your back, or I'm not going to mention Nuke tonight. And he was like...
He literally bounded across the booth, under a console, dug through a box, came back over, ripped his shirt off.
Yeah,
Gordon
so
Ramsay style.
He's like half naked on the booth, which was hysterical at this point.
Put on a pink T-shirt, a shirt that he pulled out.
I took the shirt off his back.
Yes.
So
that's
I just want to do a shout out to Bill, who is an attractive man.
And who, after,
a buffed man.
After you got that, pointed out to him that the... FX Guy TV episode where we took a look at their new technology preview was already on the website.
Yeah, I didn't happen to mention that before I made him strip half naked on the booth in the middle of the show.
So if you haven't checked that out, be sure to check out the FX Guy TV app that has some of that stuff from the Foundry.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it was just really, really
no,
it was
that's
totally
great.
Hilarious.
You know, I did find myself spending a lot of time. It's kind of funny how the Foundry booth has become more of a home base over the last few years. And somebody pointed out to me today, very interesting, that... if you walked onto the Autodesk booth, everyone's wearing suits that works there. And if you walk in the Quantel booth, everyone's wearing soft shirts and they have a coffee bar.
I love
which
Autodesk,
was like Autodesk's
right?
thing yeah. years ago, which was Discrete's thing years ago, having a coffee bar on the booth.
But I love Autodesk, right? But
bizarre.
Here's the bottom line. They were doing the demos that they had done in the user group, right?
Right.
So I had sat for 2 hours through their demos. So I didn't need to go and reset through them.
Which I like personally.
Some cool client demos.
They did. I love the split screen thing where they did a full on demo with the presenter's face, the keyboard. So like on Luster you could see what he was doing. Paul Andrews was doing the demos.
I can't believe you brought that up.
Why?
Well, you missed the whole thread then on FX PhD where they're saying that's how we should do all the PhD classes. And
oh,
we've been saying,
well.
No, that's not a good idea. And then you go on the friggin' podcast
no.
and start saying that's what we should do.
It worked very well in that environment.
Yeah, but
seeing the keyboard on a flame would do nothing. What are you going to see, a pen scratching around?
Well, thank you.
A Luster, it's a great thing because you got trackballs and you get the whole, you know, that's a different experience. Of course, they also have the helmet cam, so that was...
I'm just not wearing the helmet cam. I'm sorry. I draw the line. I'm not doing background with a helmet cam.
You're doing background...
Don't give me that look,
background
Montgomery.
Fundamental confessions. I can see it now. We'll just rig your house. Five cameras.
I'm not... So, hey, do you know we could do it here? Because there's a mirror on the roof.
Just in the living room. In the living room, there's a mirror.
Get out of bed here.
That's just wrong.
And what's that on your screen?
That's wrong.
Oh, okay, it's an ad.
So, anywho.
What were you talking about? You were about to say something about Final Cut.
Final Cut, I was?
Yeah, I thought. You were about... Well, before I started going about Bill stripping naked.
Oh, well, yeah, we'll post pictures if you check.
Flickr, I'll put pictures of Bill stripping naked, and I'll put pictures of... I'll put pictures of all the screenshots. We shot the devil out of the Final Cut users group.
I'm glad we're leaving tomorrow. I'm not sure I can edit it.
I know. You know.
Okay, so I'm gonna do a shout-out. Can I do a shout-out?
Sure,
sorry,
shout
I'm
out.
Jumping off script. Go nuts. But I went today and saw Stu's presentation, which was a super session. I'm not quite sure why it's called a super session.
Stu from the Orphanage.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
$1 million look on $1,000 budget at the convention center, which I'd actually tweeted was coming up. And so there were a few people there talking in addition to Stu, because they had like a panel thing, right? But I've got to say this. I found Stu's presentation really, really interesting. I'm being a bit harsh now, but I would actually almost preferred to not have the panel discussion. I don't know if you've ever found this, but if you get a panel discussion, it's really hard to get in-depth on something.
Yep.
So what happens is that all the comments that the panel were making, and there were good guys out there like Alex and stuff, right? They're all making good comments, but they're just not being able to dig deep, right? Because you're in a panel on the couch, you just kind of, you know. So, I don't know.
Well, there's not, you know, Steve Jobs doesn't do three, you know, it's basically a smaller collection of people. It's him and a couple of guests. That's usually it, you know. It's not a big panel.
See, the thing is, successful Stu's keynotes. Stuff was phenomenally interesting, right? Like, I mean, he was, you know, because it's like the book stuff, right? But he was also showing ads and stuff that he'd right. done and making, you know, suitably Stu-type comments like, this camera is so small it can fit up your nose and cost a couple of bucks, which, you know, but it was making good points.
So what's your takeaway on this whole content theater thing? Because I didn't go over there. We talked about it beforehand on the podcast.
Did we? Did we talk about it?
You talked about the programs. You did the whole podcast with the
people from NAB.
Oh, the one before. I thought you meant like the last time we had the...
No, I just mean here. In terms of, you know, so this is a new thing. Obviously, sure, NAB is trying. Sure. What was your take on it?
Here's something pretty interesting. We went to... Well, there was panel discussions there, and I guess it was similar. I guess if you don't know much about a subject, then a panel discussion isn't the worst thing in the world because you get to hear a bunch of people maybe who you wouldn't ordinarily hear talking. But I got to say, like, for me personally, I don't know. I just sort of felt like, well, let's face it. Like, I went to the F-35 presentation, and it was like a quarter full. Now, yeah. It was nice to see the F-35 projected in 4K. Because I wanted to have a comparative test because I'd seen the red projected in 4K. But the panel for, by comparison, Journey to the Center of the Earth was completely packed, like was full. But
I guess my question is always, I mean, when I heard about this, I was like, you know, even before FX Guide, when we started doing so much stuff at FX at NAB, I never really wanted for more to do at NAB. I always had plenty to do.
Well, I actually went to 3 or 4 sessions this NAB, which
right,
I've not
done before.
That's what
I'm curious to
get. And the general VFX stream stuff was for at a very introductory level, right? So that's not for me. The content theater was good because they could invest quite a lot of money in putting in multiple 4K projectors, full Real D stuff. And we don't have much Real D in Australia, so I could sit there and watch Real D in a very well-calibrated setup.
Gotcha.
They had filmmakers that wouldn't normally be at NAB, like the director, the DOP and stuff talking. So I found that interesting. Stu's session today, I was like... I really enjoyed it. As I said, I would have preferred just right. Stu to talk the whole time. Not that I don't like the other guys, because they're friggin' brilliant, right? It's just any one of those could have had their own session and talked right. in depth, and I would have gone to those as well. So I don't mind that the NAB's gone this way at all. I think it's fine. But I guess with all of these things, it's pretty content-dependent, right? If you turn up to do, like they did with the Sony thing, a kind of F-23 love fest, which you see as being an equipment manufacturer thing, people just don't buy it. I mean, people are so savvy with their time. You know, if you do a, we're going to give you a sales pitch type, and not, you know, the guys that were doing the presentation and the F-35 were actually guys we'd interviewed from Stargate Digital, right? Like the Stargate actually made it. And so that was pretty right. interesting. Hmm. But a couple of Sony suits sitting up on the, you didn't really feel like you were getting an in-depth, it was like a sponsored event almost, that's what it felt like.
Right.
Whereas, you know, we got a much more unfettered opinion when we got the Journey stuff. But, look, it's content. I mean, I reckon if you had Jim Cameron turning up at what it was like to film Avatar, the place could have filled up 18 right. times over, and if you don't, you don't.
So we'll give it a tentative thumbs up and see what they do next year, see what they offer. And
well, I went to the DOP one before the whole thing started, which was a red event, talking that, and that was a really good group of guys. They're all DOPs, had a good vibe to it. You were at that one for the first part, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good vibe. It was a really good vibe.
Now, it wasn't that in-depth for us.
No, it wasn't. I'm familiar with the stuff. But again, I appreciate the fact that they're doing that. And, you know, they're building also over the course of the weekend and into more and higher level ones as well. So,
you know, I
and
think
Gary
about it,
Adcock, who is based in Chicago, too, is heavily involved with that.
Yeah?
He's a great guy. So
I think I guess that's my problem. I guess my problem is if I go to a seminar, like at SIDGRAPH, right, the seminars are so complex that you get so much out of them, right? Whereas the sort of fluffier ones that just pad out the conference, I mean,
right?
Yeah,
and conference sessions are fairly expensive. I mean, depending upon your view on things, right? We were talking about the.
That's true.
We had the guy come in from Spain.
Yeah, that's right. He came in. What was it?
Yeah.
He asked me. He said, "Yeah." He said, "They." He said, "Is it usual in your country to say $1,260 and mean $1,260?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, I went to sign up for my After Effects class." And didn't realize I had to take a full conference to take it.
Well, here's the other thing, right? If you,
and it was $1,260.
Like you could go down to the Adobe booth, and they'll have a session scheduled at some point for After Effects, right?
Yeah.
And they'll probably have seats and...
Yeah, Adobe has really good... Actually, Red Giant Software had a couple ones that I happened on. They were really cool. Some particular ones. Yeah,
I always like those guys.
In there in the past as well. It's funny. It's a really tiny booth there, kind of back behind in the plug-in pavilion, I think.
Oh, it was? Oh,
really?
Yeah, and the whole thing just gets filled with people. Like, there's no way to walk, no way to get around, just... You know, like 50 people standing around this tiny booth watching these people present. There's some real gems there.
I mean, I'd happily present at NAB hardcore FX PhD stuff, except for the fact that it's just too valuable for us going and meeting people and sorting out stuff and it just tire-kicking bits of technology you wouldn't otherwise get to.
Yeah, and in front, we talked about Autodesk earlier and stuff, but Dave Waller, I think it was, from Brickyard, did a really cool presentation.
Oh, and Victor.
And Victor did one tonight. I dropped by. And, you know, kudos to Victor. Thanks, Victor, because it was all in Spanish. But I did recognize FXPhD when you mentioned it. So, and then, so anyway, but Victor, there were
Victor's
a couple
a
good.
We love Victor.
Yeah,
for those who don't know, really one of our professors on FXPhD.
If you go there for a guest presentation, if you kind of keep an eye on that, there's some really great things to
well,
see.
Well, I'll tell you another good guest presentation was Mark Christensen at 3 o'clock over at the
Artbeats
thing, because Mark was doing stuff.
I saw him on the way over.
And stuff, yeah. See, if you can get that, that's good, I think. And
you just have to know where to look.
Yeah, which you want to kind of avoid. But see, then the thing, that's it. How many stews were up doing sessions in the thing and how many were doing it down on the floor is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
Like, if you've got a Mark Christensen down on the floor giving something, why am I going to pay $1,600 to go get somebody else? I don't know who did After Effects up in the NAB, and maybe they're a really good guy,
right?
But I'd go see Mark Christensen anywhere, so, you know.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't have known about it except I happened to run into him on the way there. He was on his way there.
So, did you guys see anything that we haven't touched on that was just startlingly sort of from left field that you just...
I did my tiny little weird booth tour trying to find the most obscure weird stuff.
Because had we mentioned on the podcast about that keyboard cover thing?
No, I don't think we did.
The one that I got free?
You got free? You're kidding me. Because I went up and walked.
Wait, I'm already pissed off because I went and interviewed the guy. I found the guy. I told you guys about it. And I got the show special. You got five more dollars off.
I argued for $5 off. I didn't know you got it for free.
Okay, wait, let's back up. There's a company
around to get $5 off, and you get the whole thing for nothing.
All right, I'm walking along the floor, and I look over, and I see this laptop, an Apple laptop sitting there.
Did you have to strip half naked on the booth?
They're now making John Munt covers. And I saw a whole...
I don't know what that means, but I don't want one.
A rubber John Munt, yeah, okay.
Anyway, I saw this laptop screen, and over the top of the laptop screen was these... rubber sheets that look like keyboards. It looked very... There's a picture on the Flickr group. We'll put a link into it. And it looked like Salvador Dali. It was this weird, you know, odd thing. And I was like... So I started walking over. I looked at him. Wafer thin, like literally waffle thin little keyboard covers, like rubber keyboard covers that snap on exactly. They don't snap. They just lay gently on top of your... Any Mac keyboard.
But
MacBook
it's
Pro,
of,
MacBook. They make them for the thin... The thick, the wireless, the little tiny wireless thin one. And
oh,
they
I did
just,
find one
they
that
just,
they didn't make.
Oh.
They didn't make a Aperture.
Second Life. The mic was really
they do World of Warcraft. They do Aperture. They do After
they
Effects.
They did not do an Aperture for the Bluetooth wireless Apple keyboard. I managed to find one of the few combinations that they didn't do.
I memorized all the Aperture hotkeys. I don't know.
Oh, you
I don't know what you speak.
What the...
But I don't remember the Final Cut hotkeys because I don't use Final Cut enough. So I got one from my MacBook. You lay it on the MacBook Pro. You lay it on the keyboard, and it's all the hotkeys wrapped out. And they're like $25. There's a show special. Yeah, let's talk Bruce.
To you, Jeff,
Bruce Franklin's the president of the, or one of the guys I talked to at the booth anyway. Bruce. I'm not sure.
So Bruce is the guy that
and he gives John things for free, I guess. Yeah, even though I do the interview and find the company, but whatever, Bruce.
Okay.
Anyway, let's listen to Bruce, and he can tell us about these covers.
We have keyboard covers for Apple laptop and desktop computers. We have application types that have the keyboard shortcuts printed on them for programs like Final Cut Pro, After Effects, Photoshop, Avid, even things like World of Warcraft. We have them for Apple desktop as well as Apple laptop computers. We have them for the MacBook Pro. We have them for the MacBook. We have them for the Apple ultra-thin keyboard, Apple's older desktop keyboard, and Apple's wireless ultra-thin keyboard. And we also have specialized covers that are just for protection, clear black and white ones, large type, and even some foreign language ones. But the popular ones are the application ones because it allows you to instantly turn your keyboard into a Final Cut keyboard or an After Effects keyboard. And you can check them out at www.kbcovers.com. We're having an NAB special. If you use promo code NAB2008, you can save 20% through the end of April.
So show special. We love show specials.
Actually, I can't believe you got that for free. Bastard.
Yeah, I know. I need another one now, Bruce. Anyway, so show special, he mentioned there. You can get it through the end of April, I think it is. And they're really nice. I think they're really well made. I was really impressed. I heard a couple manufacturers on the floor talking about going over to see them after they saw them.
I tell you,
to have them made for their product.
Who was hosting the Super Session, and I think you got over to their booth. It was the Red Rock guys. Brian was hosting it, and Red Rock Micro does some amazingly cool camera gear and stuff. Though it can turn a small camera into a specced out huge thing, but that's kind of what you want to be able to control focus and stuff.
I've got a picture of some tiny little camera they had a whole rig on with handles. It was pretty cool. They also had a Red on there with a stills lens with a Red Rock Micro thing in front of that. I was kind of like, wow, this is a bizarre concept here. I think that's what it was anyway. I just kind of glanced.
Did you guys happen to check out the Film White booth?
I went past.
Yeah, yep. Actually pretty interesting. Ran into a fellow Chicago and Charles Carl there, our friend from NH.
Another shout out there. Yeah. We love Charles. He's a good guy.
Really amazing technology that they're showing there at the booth.
Well, I was going to say, that brings me, I said earlier there were buzzwords like crazy this year. The one was 3D. 4K was the other big buzzword. It seemed like everybody was talking about 4K. And they were showing GPU renderer that could do 30 to 40 layers of 4K all at the same time or something. Yeah, I know. Anyway, we talked to Steve Chapman, one of the founders of Film Light, and we just got a quick little blurb from him about what they were showing at the show.
So what we're showing at the show, we're showing Baselight 3.3, which is just going to go first customer ship after the show. That's got a whole new node of features, mostly based around the workflow side of the project, about how the file system is now opened up and how you can remotely mount it, how it can be used for QuickTime and MXF integration with Avid, playing off Sans, the whole workflow side of the process. We're also showing some of the new 4.0 features. Probably the most interesting is the GPU renderer, which gives very high performance even at 4K resolutions, so showing 30, 40 layers at 4K color correction. In terms of other products, TrueLight, which is our color calibration system, which comes with Baselight, where we're sort of opening that up a lot more. We're going to provide a lot more plugins, probably some free downloads, just so that it can be used all the way through the facility, not just in the high-end grading suite, because we sort of realised that even the guys in the 3D and the 2D visual effects departments, they really want to see exactly what the colourist is seeing in the high-end grading suite. They want exactly the same calibration, so we're opening it up a lot more to make it basically available on a lot more platforms. And also available on set. Again, it comes down to seeing the same thing on set that you see in the grading suite, that you see in the visual effects department, keeping that calibration through the whole process.
So I think the best thing I like is the whole idea of opening up TrueLight to more and more plugins, getting it in more parts of the facility.
Calibration across the facility is really interesting and sorely needed, actually.
I'm sorry, I was just distracted because while we were talking, I tweeted this week a feed, right?
We tweeted the hell out of
Twitter. And so
we tweeted.
I commented on my Twitter feed that when that Stew session was on with Alex and stuff and Brian up on the stage, that I was twittering it, right? And it didn't occur to me until I was almost three quarters of the way through that this was going actually to Stu and Alex and everybody's iPhone in their pocket. I know that they were following me, right?
So you realize we have gone down the slippery road to hell where now you can be on a panel commenting on
it. This is even weirder because while I'm saying this, like now, tonight, Stu is posting things on his Twitter about how he first experienced this at South by Southwest and he gave a panel and turned his phone on afterwards and read what everybody really thought about what he'd done. So
yeah, I mean, that's it. It's such a weird thing.
So now Stu's going to listen to this podcast talking about him twittering in response to me twittering to him talk. I'm like, this is just going to
explode. That, by the way.
Wait, let me refresh.
Oh, no. This is just too weird. My pocket's
John Mont,
vibrating.
Mike is talking about Stu posting. There it is.
Oh, dear.
Well, anyway, Twitter has been actually really cool. I can really see the potential
of this
thing now.
Well, Wingrove bloody stalking me. Yeah. No, it's been great.
But we were at the Apple event and we were twittering like crazy between the three of us and then seeing other people's Twitters come through and it was like, wow, this is really interesting. I can see this technology. It's really changed the whole thing.
Again, yeah.
I have a request for emails and for Twitters. If you're going to post me something, do not post me incredibly clever cryptic remarks that require me to post you something back that says, what do you mean by your clever cryptic remark? And then they come back
with
something.
You want to sleep at night and not roll around thinking, what were they saying?
Yeah, so I just end up having to set back, I'm sorry, I don't understand what you mean. They're like, oh, I was just making a snide remark about the blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay.
It's the 140 character limit. Snide remarks have to fit in there, and that's the limit on Twitter. So.
Okay, not so much.
Sorry.
So, Carmen anyway. Girl, next time you post, be really clear about what you're talking about.
I'm hungry.
I
know,
dinner. I want to go to House of Blues.
Wait, one more small freaky booth I found. Not freaky. This one's freaky. Not freaky. This one's not freaky
not
at
Robert
all.
Jones?
This is absolutely... But it's not...
We can edit that out.
We can edit what out?
What?
This fact you said freaky?
Exclaim freaky. It's fine. We don't edit it out freaky. I didn't mean freaky. I'm sorry.
Tell
I apologize.
Us, and we will be the judge of your freakiness.
Okay. You know how we... Well, I
don't
said
wait,
4K,
that.
3D, what was the other one? There was a third thing I said was going to be the buzzwords for the show.
What?
The other one. Oh, the database thing. This anyway,
getting
the 3D
database.
Thing, back to that.
What?
The back to that, I was walking along, and of course, I saw a wall of 3D glasses, and I thought, well, I should go take a picture of that. It'd be good. We'll use it for some story sometime or something. So I'm taking pictures, and Craig Jones, the guy from American Paper Optics, comes over to me and asks me, talks to me and stuff. John is now putting on 3D glasses. He gave me a sample pack of all the 3D glasses.
Wait,
Mike's getting the camera out so we can add this to the Flickr feed as we go. This will be
we'll
perfect.
Add this to the Flickr feed. So if you're sitting at home watching this, wondering why we
you can hear the shutter now,
podcast,
this will be so exciting.
You'll
be
see
almost,
why we shouldn't
this will
have
be the most
video
delayed.
Podcast.
They should invent television so you could see this in real time.
Television, that would be pictures and voice.
Anyway, the... We talked to Craig Jones from American Paper Optics and found out some interesting things about it. We thought it would be a good thing. They make the 3D glasses, so we thought, let's talk to them about how exploding 3D is. So, wait for the shutter. Charging the battery. Lens cap, battery.
Yeah, shut up.
All right, let's hear the clip, and we'll come back, and Michael figured it out.
Business is doing real good. We have been seeing our growth each year exceed the previous year. Last year, we produced a little over 80 million glasses, and this year we expect to exceed that as well. The 3D world is moving very quickly. When people have an interest in our product, we usually hear a couple of years in advance of what's going to come down the pike. And so I get a good pulse of what's happening, and it's beating very hard right now.
So I think the thing that's interesting is that, see, Mike finally got it going. There we go. You got such a quiet shutter on that thing. That's nice. Anyway, I think the thing that's interesting is Craig said that they made 80 million glasses last year. First of all, I thought it was interesting that he's...
80 million.
Yeah, 80 million paper 3D glasses of all sorts. He said that so far this year they've made 70 million. So that should tell you something about the amount of 3D growth that's going on. I mean, they make them for DVD. And so he says they're the only company that makes them. I find that really fascinating.
I think
he was
the
very
only
clear
that
about
makes
that.
The cardboard anabolic, ones, not
the cardboard
metal
ones. Right?
Yeah, but if they're making 80 million of them or 70 million so far this year already, I mean, I'm sorry, he's got a good business going if he's the only one making them.
Yeah, but I think it's like giveaway ones, not like, you know, ones you're going to see in.
Well, he's not giving them away.
Yeah, that's
what I mean. That's not like. The ones that
polarize.
They're not spinning discs stuff. No. Yeah, but that's different. But still, I mean, I just think it's an interesting thing that's growing. That from that perspective, he's seeing such a big growth. Anyway, they also made some. There's also on the Flickr thing. You'll see some weird ones. They make things that you point at the lights, and the point source becomes a snowflake. For New Year's Eve, they made a Target one Target ones that made the Target logo on every point light. I don't know why you don't wear those, but anyway, they did it. They do marketing things as well.
That what that photo was? I thought they just had gobos in front of the lights, and I was thinking you were like, "That's cool." And I was like, really?
"No, I was shooting through the glasses." It was a clever bit of photography.
You look at Mike's face.
I just wanted to talk about this really hardcore part of visual effects. You know?
No, it's really interesting.
I'm sorry. How's it part of visual effects?
It's not. That's why I'm making a joke. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll write it down.
Just send me the memo. Hey, So
tomorrow,
are we done? Are we going to the bar? Are we going to dinner?
We just got our annual vote of most annoying thing at the show and best of show. So my most annoying thing of NAB is I think that people that are pushing out a 3D agenda without actually having any actual tools behind it and trying to make a big deal out of it are really annoying. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. If you do an X shift in a stereoscopic pair of images, that is adjusting the intraocular distance. And you can talk for 5 minutes about what you just did, but all you did is a left shift versus the foundry that when they make an intraocular shift, it's an incredibly complex, you know, series of movements that means things in the distance in the shot don't move as much as things close to the camera. That's cool.
Absolutely.
Making a big deal out of moving the thing to the left. I'm sorry, that's circa 1978.
Yeah. Now, I got to tell you, there's a lot of people on the show floor and off the show floor talking about what they're going to do about 3D and what they're going to stereoscopic. Yeah, yeah. And meanwhile, what I love about the Foundry is they're off doing cool science. They're off going, hey, what could we do? What could we bring to the party? What could we leverage in our software tool bag and come up with new tools to do this? And it's just so smart as compared to, you know, looking at ways to monetize it, basically. You know? They will monetize it. But
it's a buzz, right? 3D's a buzz. So everyone feels they have to have something in that space.
Right.
And they just come up with crap. And then just it muddles the water. And then everyone just gets... So that's my pet hate.
That's a brilliant one.
Love.
That's my pet hate is that they people muddle the waters by just claiming they're doing... You know, when something
so
comes
related,
up...
Okay, got it. Both related stereo.
Okay.
I think mine would probably be that just an interesting factor that I found kind of compelling was the ion generation thing, just because this merging of the shot-based compositor that they had trying to do something a bit more with it, I thought was really quite compelling. As far as the annoying thing,
other than
the
how
people
slow
at
the
espresso station today that were just chatting, text messaging on their fucking phones while there was a line of six people.
Can I just point out, it's actually really hard to Twitter while walking through the aisles of NAB.
Do you know how many times I almost walked into one of those park benches?
Oh, and I'm so sure.
Because they've never been there. We've been coming here for how long? There's never been a park bench in the middle of the damn aisle. And now you walk, you know, you're walking along and you're not paying attention and somebody jumps out of your way at the last second. And you're like, I had an observation. It's not really fitting the theme of your worst and best and all that. But, you know, we've been doing this for 9 years, FX Guide. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people know us. And it's gotten easier to have conversations with people because you walk up and they go, oh, yeah, sure, what do you need? You know, here's a thumb drive with our images, because that's a really nice thing we love in the press world.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great new advance. I had a really horrible experience from a company I will not name where I called a month before NAB and said, I'd really like to see your product. I think it'd be really cool. I have a really close friend who said, you know, you should check out this product. So I went, never got a call back. Nothing.
Name
so
them.
I thought, no, I won't name them.
Out them on national national podcast.
International
podcast.
So then I got to the show and I decided I'd go see them. And I explained my problem. And they said, no problem. Let us give you a demo. And in the middle of the demo, twice, they completely stopped my demo to butt in to show somebody something else. Now, I understand that if I have a media badge on, they may be thinking, hey, he may not be a customer. But I just felt like, you know what? I finally just got up and walked away and said, you know, so a big thumbs down to a company I will not name.
Why don't you name them? I wouldn't. I'd out them.
You know, I'd rather not
give
them
a hint.
Publicity.
Let me guess.
A hint?
Yeah.
No hint. I still think.
Such a nice guy.
Yeah, well, you know.
Bygones be bygones.
Yeah. Let's just say it's a booth. If anybody knows me, this is the quick hint, okay?
Yeah.
It's a booth that I would not be caught dead on for years. And I decided to give it another try and do not even start guessing. So there we go.
So two things, right? Firstly, one is that Stu's been been twittering about the fact that we're podcasting about him and twittering about him. So Stu, thanks for that, man.
Such a loser.
Can we eat now? Can we drink now?
Yes.
We have a shoot in the morning at 7 a.m., so we have to now.
I'm tell you my second point.
Oh, go ahead. Tell us the second point.
No, I think the moment's passed.
Please?
Oh. So that's it for another year.
I'm not leaving this podcast until you do it. We're just going to stay on. Oh, wait, you're recording.
Okay, well, that's it for another year from FX Guide as I'm controlling the recorder.
Not anymore.
Until next
time. Get a Y-cord quick. We can hijack it.
I'm Mike Seymour. I want a special thanks and shout-out to all the crew that's been helping put this together, particularly Jimmy. Who is a legend.
Editor, cameraman, you name it. No, we'd have quit. We definitely would have quit.
There's been a lot of people that have helped us out, and we want to thank all of them. And we really want to thank the people who have been giving us response, both on Twitter, on the web, and on the servers. So thank you for that. It's been a good year. We've got a shoot tomorrow morning we have to go to, which is at the Neon Graveyard.
We are very excited. I've wanted to go there for years, and we're going to shoot some FX PhD classes stuff there. We'll shoot some FX Guide TV stuff. It'll be
I have this vision of it popping being like up. The Statue of Liberty and Planet of the Apes. You know, like this big neon sign. It's going to be great. Very much looking forward to it. Great way to close out the week with you guys.
Yep. So it's good.
It. Actually, the best part about NAB is hanging out with you guys. So.
Aww. Aww. Good. I enjoyed sleeping in the bathroom myself. Okay. Talk to you guys later. See ya.
This FX podcast is sponsored by DaVinci, makers of the new Resolve with incredible real-time performance at 4K. Check out DaVinci at davsys.com. That's DAVSYS.com. This podcast is also sponsored by GenArts, creators of Sapphire Plugins, the essential VFX toolkit for digital artists. Stay tuned to www.genarts.com for info about the upcoming release for OFX products, including Toxic, Nuke, and Fusion 64.
Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2008 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide,